Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody, and good evening to all our friends in Sweden. Boy, do we have a great show today, tonight, wherever you are around the world. We have listeners all around the world, Australia, the UK, and parts elsewhere, all over the globe. We're going global here on Blue Shirt Banner Radio. So it's going to be a fantastic show tonight. Today, I'm going to have to get used to this afternoon stuff. As our guest today is Ulf Nilsson. And Ulf Nilsson is, you know, we remember him as a Ranger, but there was a lot of stuff that Ulf was known for and a history with Ulf before he even hit New York. And I'd like to get into a little bit of that because Ulfie was a great international player. For his home country, Sweden, as well as the rest of just worldwide. He was one of the, you know, he was part of some teams that really took the Soviets to task and beat the Soviets in some big games. And you're talking about when the Soviets were, their national team was the best in the world. And his participation in the World Hockey Association. He's the all-time assist leader in the World Hockey Association. Just a really great guy. I had a chance to talk to him in person. He was in New York, and he's just a fantastic guy and plenty of stories. And I walked away from talking to him that Ulf is a very cerebral guy. He's also he took a lot of pride. I think what I walked away was that he, from talking to him, that I didn't really understand at the time. You know, again, I was a young kid, but when I walked away from that, Ulfie took pride in all facets of his game, face-off, defensive responsibilities, and a hate-to-lose mentality and give it 100%. Lay it all on the ice, and you know, if it wasn't for the misfortune of quite a lot of injuries, Ulf Nilsson probably would have been one of a great NHL player. As a matter of fact, he was an excellent NHL player. He averaged a point a game for the Rangers, even with all those injuries. And we're going to welcome Ulf to the program, and I'm going to bring in my co-host Mandar a little bit into the show. Our regular co-host, Jim Schmiedeberg, is off on assignment, as we say, but I'll bring in Mandar later. So I guess without, you know, as we say, without further ado, let's bring in the great Ulf Nilsson. Ulf, welcome to Blue Shirt Banner Radio.
Thank you very much, Eddie.
Now, Ulf, I mean... You know, I kind of, you know, started in the opening talking about your great international career, but let's start from the beginning because that's where every good story starts, at the beginning. And would you tell the fans out there, because I think a lot of fans don't know what went on before, especially Ranger fans, don't know what went on before you came to the Rangers with all that big hoopla. Why don't you talk about your dad and your nickname, and give the fans maybe some background on that.
Okay, how far back do you want me to go? From the real beginning?
Let's go back to your dad being a premier Swedish soccer player and that.
Yeah. Yeah, I grew up in a small town where also my dad grew up it's called Nynäshamn. It's about an hour by car south of Stockholm. and is known for them. That's where you go to take the ferry to Gotland. That's where Ingmar Bergman had his summer place.
Oh, wow. I
But
didn't know that.
growing up there in Nynäshamn, it's really a good place because I bike to every practice in the town there. My parents never had a car, and my father was an electrician working on a regular basis because in those days there were no professional athletes in Sweden. And he was
Wow.
a very, very successful soccer player. He played for 10 years with AIK in Stockholm. So I was recruited as a 17-year-old to play soccer for AIK. And they won the Swedish championship in soccer last year. But they're not having a
Oh,
great
wow.
year this year.
Not having a great year this year. So where did you start to get the hockey bug? I mean, where did that come in? I mean, you recruited as a soccer player. When did hockey become a part of your life?
Well, it was part of my life from the day I was able to walk, really, because winters are fairly long in Sweden, so you don't play soccer in the wintertime, and you play ice hockey and what we call bandy. It's like on a frozen soccer field with a curved stick.
Oh.
And so I played that those sports as well while I was growing up, and I was picked to play on the Stockholm sort of all-star team, both in soccer and in hockey. So it was difficult for me to decide which sport I was going to choose. But nowadays, and unfortunately, I think the kids in Sweden are forced to choose which sport they are going to really focus on. And I don't think a 10 or a 12-year-old know what's best for him at that age.
Right. I mean, you can't even decide, what you want for lunch at that age. No less, what sport you want to take up. And I guess the parents have a kind of take control over that direction, and maybe that's not always the best, right?
Well, that's true because there aren't that many players that get to Peter Forsberg or Mats Sundin status. And but every parent dreams about having their son become one of those great players.
Well,
They
we
see the
certainly,
bank account.
I think if we talk about those Swedish players, and I mean, Peter Forsberg, a fantastic hockey player. We have one here with the Rangers, Henrik Lundqvist, who recently Dominic Hasek came out and said it is the best in the world. So if Dominic Hasek is saying that about Henrik, we all know he's a world-class goalie. But you and Anders really set the stage for the European player coming over to North America. There were not many Europeans playing here. It was kind of for the lack of a better word, an old Canadian boys' league, professional hockey over here in North America. And you guys came over here, and maybe I'll backtrack a little bit. Well, no, I said you guys came over here, and I know that Anders met Dr. Jerry Wilson over in Sweden, and I've had Carrie, his son, on. And as a matter of fact, I think one of the let me just I think they're actually one of the only families to have three generations of NHL players in. Jerry Wilson, I think, or their grandfather, I'm not sure, played with the Canadiens for a little bit. Carey played with the Whalers and the Rangers, and Colin is now playing with Nashville. So, can you tell us how you got to North America, I guess, in the first place?
Yeah, in those days, no one drafted European players. So the NHL teams, they just said, well, I like this Ulf Nilsson, I like this Anders Hedberg. So they put our names on their sort of list in the NHL office. And I was listed by Buffalo Sabres, and Anders was listed by Toronto Maple Leafs. And when we had an opportunity to move to North America in 1974, Bobby Hull had started together with some business people the World Hockey Association in 1972.
And
Bobby played in Winnipeg, and Jerry Wilson, he was from Winnipeg, and he got phone calls from Winnipeg because Bobby felt he needed some players to play with, and Jerry was doing some research at the physical education school where Anders was studying at the time.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So Jerry was contacting the Winnipeg people and said, these guys in Sweden, they're fantastic hockey players. So they came into the picture, and Bill Robinson, that was director of player personnel in Winnipeg at the time, passed away a couple of years ago, came over to Sweden and asked us if we were interested to come over and bring us to Winnipeg to see what, so we can see what kind of city it is. And we got to meet Don Baisley, that is a good friend of Jerry Wilson. They grew up in Winnipeg together. And Don has been a really, really successful agent for many, many players in the NHL. We've had a lot of the great Finns, Jari Kurri, Timo Salonen, a lot of the great Canadians, Joe Sakic, Paul Kariya, Theo Fleury. He's been handling a lot of Forsberg's old contracts and helped a lot of other Swedish players, and he's just a fantastic person. So we got a really good feeling about Winnipeg. And I think, as I told you before, Eddie, you're only going to be as good as the people you surround yourself with. And I wanted to, even if we hadn't played much together, but it's always nice to have a countryman in the dressing room with you, and maybe we could have an opportunity to influence the team that we're coming to, how we want to play. But if you come by yourself, it's very difficult to do that.
Right.
And I really didn't want to go on my own to Buffalo and be the only Swede there. Because it was a great opportunity for me and Anders to play with Bobby Hull. And it was what we were going to start with, at least, to get the opportunity to play with Bobby. And the only problem with that line was that Bobby, he was born 1939, and he's 71 now. And Anders is born 31, and I just turned 60, so I was born 50. So when we came over in 1974, Bobby was already 35 years old. So he's been saying a lot of times to me now, you guys gave me 4 extra years on my career, because he was really tired of really playing up and down on his wing. And now we came over and crisscross and take each other's position. And it was like a great orchestra from day one when we stepped on the ice.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it, like a grand orchestra, because this you're talking about a time in hockey where everybody went up and down their wings, and you guys kind of came in, and it was almost like a how could I put it? I don't want to relate it to soccer too much, but you guys would interchange, you would switch wings, you would do things, you know what I'm saying, to generate a scoring opportunity, not really in the most typical of North American fashions. And I mean, before you guys even got to Winnipeg, especially you, Ulf, I mean, you had a lot of, you know, at the age of 22, you were on the Swedish national team. You played in the Vestia Cup in Moscow. You played, you know, just going back a little bit more. I mean, you had some international experience. You won the world championship team with Sweden. You won the silver in the world championships. Did that international play help you adjust to the WHA and and a grind of I guess just did it help you when you first started turning pro in North America?
Yeah, I think so, definitely. It was really a great help because we played, I believe, against the best in those days, and that was the old Russian teams with the top line. I don't know if you remember those names, but the defense pair was Gusev and Vasilyev on the first line, first unit, and the line Mishailov, Petrov, and Shalamov. Awesome hockey players, but they were more or less scientific professionals. In those days, with the old Iron Curtain, they were filling them with vitamins that we didn't have in Sweden.
Yeah, I mean, for the younger people out there I wasn't that old back then either, but I've seen the tapes, and the USR team had a mystique, and as Ull said, a scientific style that was almost, I don't want to say robotic, but they play with the unit of five, such great players as Boris Mikhailov, Valery Komarov, Petrov, like you said, you mentioned the D-men, Vasilyev, and they had some great teams. So I guess that, when you play against that kind of high caliber, I mean, best in the world now at the age of 22, that's got to rub off in a positive way. Now, when you go ahead, Elf.
I think we were pretty well prepared when we came to Winnipeg. So we had worked really hard in the summertime, and that was the way the European players were brought up, that you come prepared to camp. And more or less the North American players in those days said camp is for getting in shape.
Right. Oh, yeah. They took the summers off and they drank beer. I mean, that's what happened back in the day. Camp was to get ready, and Anders had spoken to that in a couple of articles that I had read that, and pretty outspoken for the time, said the same thing you just said.
Yeah, but I think it's kind of nice to hear Glenn Sather say, because he built the dynasty in Edmonton after the style that we played in Winnipeg and the old Montreal Canadiens, like puck control. If you have the puck, the other team can't score. So in North America in the old days, just get over the blue or red line and then shoot it in. And we didn't do that all the time. Sometimes we need to sort of mix it up a little bit so the opponents didn't know what you were going to do. But we were not afraid to sort of throw it back to our defense and then come back in a loop again. And usually then the other team were standing still and didn't know where to go. So that's kind of nice when Glenn Sather is saying that he built the dynasty with Messi and Gretzky after the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah. Well, it's true, and I was thinking about this as far as the Jets go. Maybe you can clarify or tell me about it. I guess when they signed Bobby Hull to all that money, and maybe you know if this is true or not, I noticed that comparatively to the other teams in the league, which had a lot of fighters, this team was a highly skilled team. Now, was it because of the finances all tied up with Bobby that they reached out to the European market in order to get these free agents such as yourself and Dan LeBratton and other Swedish players? Do you think that was a factor at all?
Well, yeah, I think they saw after our success in the first year that they wanted to get more Swedes over or Finnish players over, because I think they were definitely not more expensive than the North American players. And that's what you have to look at all the time. That's what when I go into a wine store. It's easy if you have money to pick the really, really good wines. But if you don't have them, you've got to be selected.
Ah. So you like the wine, Elf, huh?
Definitely.
I know. I always see you putting pictures of wine and what you're eating on Facebook. I love it. I wish I was there to eat. So the first season, you come to WHA and you play under a coach, and Bobby Hull actually is like a co-coach at the time, a guy by name, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Rudy Pillow. Is that correct?
Rudy Pillow.
Yeah. And what kind of coach was he?
He was great, but it was Bobby that decided everything. So he was more or less just the gate opener.
Right.
But he had a good saying, though, Eddie. He said, it's hard to make chicken salad out of chicken shit.
Yeah, it still applies today.
Yeah, it does.
They have a saying like that in America. You can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear.
Yeah.
Which basically is a more tamer saying, but I like that one. I'm going to use that one. So as Winnipeg, Manitoba, I mean, let's be honest here. This is not like a hotbed of activity back in the 70s. I'm not sure it's that much of a hot spot now. But,
they do love their hockey, though. They love their hockey.
They're big time. And did they accept you guys right away? I guess – once you start scoring and starting showing off your talents, people start to love you. But was it hard for the Canadians to accept you, or was it very easy?
No, it was very hard for the first year, really, because a lot of our teammates were afraid that, wow, these guys are coming over and taking our jobs now.
Right.
So they were kind of afraid a little bit about what was going to happen in the future. But it was really interesting when we, even before camp, we were over kind of early and we practiced with the university team in Winnipeg. And we were just scrimmaging a little bit, and it was just up and down the ice, and it was bing, bing, and it's into the net. And people said, wow, this is amazing. This is going to be very exciting. But a lot of people said, in the stand, well, wait a minute, now they're playing against university players. Wait and see until they play against real guys.
Right.
But it was a completely different game in those days, because the defensemen, they were allowed to grab you with two arms that they're not allowed to. They could cross-check the shit out of you in front of the net that they're not allowed to do anymore. So I think the game is, in my view, has become a lot better because they protect the skilled players a little bit better nowadays.
Right. And imagine an Anders Hedberg and Ulf Nilsson healthy in the game today. I mean, forget about it. I mean, you guys would have doubled your point totals because, I mean, defensemen were told to hold up the wing, grab, clutch the wingers, and just, you know, get away with murder. Let's face it. They did anything. I mean, but that was their job. And listen, you know, and defensemen, on the other hand, that I've talked to, you know, some contemporaries hate the new rules because you can't do that. So,
yeah.
So it's a little, but I do like a lot of the new rules the NHL has. Some of them I got a little problem with, but that's for another show. And so Winnipeg is. How, but city-wise, I know that you played, you grew up in a small town. How was Winnipeg compared to where you grew up?
Well, after growing up in Nunatown, where it's only 10,000 people, maybe 30,000 now, but I lived in Stockholm before I went to Winnipeg for seven years. And Stockholm is a city that is bigger, actually, than Winnipeg.
So you were used to the big city, and I'm sure.
I don't know. Everything is relative, because nothing is as great and nice and big as New York, though.
Oh, yeah, you're telling me. I mean, I live here, and I'm always – there's such an energy about New York City that I just always – does something for me every time I go in New York City, and we'll get to the Ranger part of this thing, which is really just, It's quite a story, but you go on later, you win the bronze medal in the World Championships. Was that after your first year with the Jets?
No. I never played any World Championships after I turned pro, because those players that go to the World Championships, they never make it into the playoffs.
Oh, okay. There you go. I need
out in the first round. So, and in the beginning there, they had the World Championship without the professional players.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm straightened out on that.
The first actually big tournament, international tournament that we were involved with was Canada Cup 1976.
Yeah, well, 1976 is a big year for you, because first of all, in the WHA playoffs, you had 26 points in 13 games. Then in the Canada Cup, the game-winning goal versus the USSR against Tretiak. That has to be a high point, Ulf. I mean,
it was a high point. But then a couple of days later, we had a low point. We lost to Finland in Winnipeg, and that's why we didn't make it into the final.
Oh. But, yeah, I know there's a low point, but, it was the world against the USSR. I mean, nobody could beat them. And it turns out you wind up beating them in 78 with the Jets being the first professional club ever to beat the Russians. Maybe that's your highlight. You got two goals. Hull gets three goals. The Soviet national team in Winnipeg, you beat the world's best. That's got to be a big one.
Really, that was an amazing game. And right before that, we had been over to Japan and played the Russians in three games. And we lost all three games there, but it was on a big ice rink, like an Olympic size. But we didn't really got blown out of any of the games, but it was really nice when we came back. We actually flew back with the team from Tokyo, and luckily Bobby Anderson and me played against Mikhailov, Petrov, and Shalamov. I don't think they've ever lost sort of a game 5-0 against another line. We won the game 5-3, but we scored 5 on that line, so that's kind of a big game for my career.
Big game. It's a big game, and I think in hockey history. I mean, the vaunted Soviet Union, who was, I mean, they were scary. I mean, I don't know if people remember this, but they were just scary. They were unknown quantity in North America, I guess with the communist, thing as well, maybe unfounded being scared of hockey players, but it was like the whole communist mystique and just the whole thing, and the way they played was so dramatically different from North American. And we have a question for you from the chat room. Somebody wants to know, is the Finland-Sweden rivalry really that fierce?
Compared to what?
Well, between the two countries, are you guys all rivals? Is it highly competitive? Like U.S.-Canada is?
It's a rivalry between U.S. and Canada.
Uh-huh. So it's like...
Yeah, somewhat. And then take that 10 times.
So there's a lot of passion between Sweden and Finland. And where does it all start? I mean, educate the U.S. fans, the North American fans here, because I wasn't aware of it.
That's the great part about sports, really, is rivalries. And I think Sweden have always been a little bit more successful than Finland. So Finland has always felt that they're sort of a little brother.
Uh-huh.
Other than that, I can't compare. They have, like, if you go way back, they were in the wars, and a lot of times Finland belonged to Sweden.
Oh, okay. So there's a lot of geographical history and then and history, real history between the countries.
Yeah.
So, okay, that's good. I didn't know that. And I thank you for that question. And so we continue on, we press on, and, you know, I guess we'll start to talk about coming to New York City, coming to New York. And somebody asked me a question that they wanted me to ask you is, did they approach you and Anders, I guess Sonny Werblin at the time, who approached you from the Rangers, and why did they want you as a package deal? I know that you guys were fantastic together, but was that your idea as coming over as a package or theirs?
I think we can go back to what I was talking about before. In the old days, they didn't draft the European players. So we were fortunate to be free agents to go to any team that we wanted. And we had decided that we wanted to stay together, Anders and I. So if you either take both of us or you don't get any one of us. And it came down to, I think, three teams. Don Basley did a fantastic job by talking to a lot of the general manager. And the general manager for the Rangers at the time was John Ferguson. So it was actually Fergie that brought us to New York. But Sonny Werblin and Jack Crumpy were the president and the vice president of Madison Square Garden. So they had a say in it too.
Right. And were there any other teams that were close that bid on you guys, that were close to getting you, or was it basically New York all the way?
Well, I think the last three teams were Chicago, Philadelphia, and New York.
Wow, I can't. You guys on the Flyers? I couldn't take that.
No.
I couldn't have taken that.
But we were really happy with the choice that we made to go to play for the Rangers. And we were really close the first year. We were.
Oh,
really, yeah. We lost to Montreal Canadiens in the final.
Oh, yeah, I remember. So I remember like it was yesterday.
And that's what maybe one of my highlights, even if I broke my ankle in February or whatever it was. But I was voted the MVP by my teammates that year, and that's a really great honor, that's a
big honor for a couple reasons. First of all, because they recognized your talent, but also this is the first time. Now, so you're playing in the WHA, and I guess this is what you kind of went through when you played originally against that college team. It's like, all right, he's played in the World Hockey Association, he's put up wild numbers there, but this is the NHL, this is the real league. Especially by the time that you arrive with the Rangers, the WHA is kind of folding and it's insolvent. And it's not the skill level wasn't what it was at one point, and when you started playing WHA, so everybody's saying, okay, you know, what can these guys do? We play it rough here. We can play it any way you want, and you get from your teammates who are a lot of Canadians, they vote you the MVP. That speaks volumes. Alfie, I mean, it really does.
Yeah, that makes me feel really good to look back on my career.
Yeah, I mean, in that year now, we've got to talk about it because every Ranger fan, and it's still going on today, is the infamous Dennis Potvin hit. And I think I know the answer to this, but I have to ask you this as a semi-serious journalist, was it a dirty hit? Is it something you viewed at the time as dirty? There's not much footage of it. What do you think? What's your take on it?
First of all, I have a lot of respect for Dennis Potvin. He was probably one of the 5 or 10 best defensemen that ever played in the NHL, I think. And that Islanders team that they put together that won 4 Stanley Cups after that year, they were amazing. Brian Trottier was an awesome hockey player as well. But going back to that hit, it was not bad at all. It was just a freak thing. And the ice in the garden was not the best ice in
no,
the
it
league.
Never was.
Yeah, because
still
they
really
had so it's so many events in the arena, so it's kind of
right.
hard, I guess, to keep a perfect ice. And my foot was just stuck in some rot in the ice, and you get a check, and unfortunately, I broke my ankle. So, and we didn't win the cup, and the Islanders won 4 the next 4 years. So that I think started the chance.
Yeah, well, I have to say, as a fan, and back then, there were a lot of, let's say, put it this way, anti-Dennis Potvin chants beside that one that used to be
yeah.
said, and I think that one, because you immediately were loved on Broadway, and you and Ed is just, you know, and we have another question. Somebody wants to know, why weren't you in the Sassoon commercials, the Sassoon Jean commercials? But Anders was.
I don't know. I ask myself that question a lot of times. Ron Grossman was in, Phil Esposito, I think, and Don Maloney, and Duguay. And I guess they couldn't fit another guy in the picture, so they had to
make. I don't know. That's pretty funny, I think. Why people are still wondering to this day.
Yeah.
Why you weren't in that commercial? so that's a good thing.
My ass was too big; I couldn't fit in.
No, I want to ask you just one question. Now you come from Winnipeg, now, and you come to New York for the first time. What is your impressions of New York for the first time? Can you remember? Can you go back in your mind and give it to us?
Well, they brought us in to have dinner with Mr. Werblin and Mr. Crumpy in the Suite 200. And I remember the garden was half full at that rainy game. And since we came on board, it's been more or less sellouts every game. So that was one thing that I remember. But then also you remember all the tall buildings and but I also remember the easy way it was to find your way around.
Mhm. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I was just talking about the fact that the garden was not full at that time. The Rangers were going through a transition period. The Emil Francis had left the been fired, actually, from the organization. And John Ferguson took over. And like you said, John Ferguson was instrumental in getting you over. We had a coach here called Jean-Guy Talbot, who was a little bit strange. He used to wear a sweatsuit behind him. You probably remember Jean-Guy. He used to wear a sweatsuit behind the bench. And the Rangers were not very good. But then once Ulf Nielsen and Hannes Hedberg came, kind of started the string of sellouts at Madison Square Garden, it still goes on today. It kind of was a resurgence of the Rangers. And like you said, you go to the Stanley Cup Finals. Now, I know you only played 2 games in that final. Did you play in the finals or early on? What happened with that?
Oh, I played the first 2 games up in Montreal, but my foot was too sore. So it wasn't fair to my teammates to try to be out there. When I couldn't give, when you can't give 100%, you shouldn't be out there. And that's what happened to me sort of every year following. I was just worn out and beaten up too much in Winnipeg, so I didn't have very much left in my body when I came to New York. But anyway, I ended up with my career close to 1 point per game. With the Rangers, so.
Yeah, I mean, you had 9 knee operations, Alf?
Yeah. And I have an artificial hip now that I put in 1994, so it's 16 years old, and it's still pretty well.
And you got problems. I saw you early on. You crushed the top three pieces on your vertebrae. I mean,
yeah.
I mean,
that was in like 70s.
Yeah, I mean, that's just amazing that that you really were able to play through a lot of injury in the NHL, and by the time you came to the NHL, like you said, you were pretty battered. Now, I guess I want to turn our focus to that first year with the Rangers. Who were some of the Ranger players that really embraced you guys and took you under the wing? I think I got – everybody seems to say when I talk to ex-Rangers or former Rangers is that Ron Greshner was a really good guy. Was that the case? And who else?
Well, it was a lot of good characters on that team. John Davison was fantastic, I think. John and his wife, Diana, they had a lot of team parties at their house up in, I don't remember if it was Rye or Harrison in those.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave Maloney was really a great guy as well. And Phil Esposito was fantastic too. Carol Vazney. There were a lot of really, really good guys.
Okay. I'm going to introduce you my co-host for today's broadcast. He goes by the nickname Mandar, and one day we'll get into why he's named Mandar. But I'm going to bring him in. I know he's got Mandar, yes. And we're going to bring Mandar in, I think. Hopefully I got him on the phone here. Mandar, are you with me?
I'm with you. Can you hear me?
Yep. Yep, we can hear you. You're talking live with the great Ulf Nielsen.
Hi, Ulf. It's an honor to talk to you. I remember watching you play, and it was always a pleasure to watch you guys out there.
Thank you very much.
I like talking about the Rangers in those days and watching everybody and playing out there. And that was the days when you had the tough Flyers and the tough Islanders. When you were talking before about the rivalry between Finland and Sweden, would you compare it to the way the Islander-Ranger rivalry was back then?
Definitely. And also Rangers-Philly, I think.
Oh, so the players thought the Rangers-Philly was just as it was intense?
Yeah, definitely. Because they were the team to beat in those days. They had a really good, and their big tactic was to intimidate the other team. That was really
Ron,
a big strategy.
Ron, I got a chance to talk to Ron Greshner, and he was talking about you and Anders when you first came over, that teams would intentionally rough you guys up, and like after every game, you guys were beat up with the cuts and bruises because – And a lot of Canadian players still feel to this day from your era that you guys were trying to steal jobs from them and they were not going to allow it and you guys were going to get, or they were going to test you in a competitive nature with the rough stuff. Was that true?
Well, intimidation has been a big, big part of hockey for a long, long time. And you can never show that you're afraid because then you might as well quit the game. So you have to stand up, and that's why I think it was so good to have Anders with me, because we were always supporting each other, both off and on the ice.
Bobby Hull was a little bit of a cantankerous type of guy. Did he give you any advice on maybe the more physical or the intimidation or what these guys are going to be doing, or did you just find that out by yourself?
No, Bobby is just an unbelievable professional hockey player or person because he has a really simple philosophy. You work really, really hard in practice, then the games are easy. And he said about the games, he said, guys, don't fight back. Just come back all the time, and we're going to score a lot of goals on our power plays that we we're getting. But the philosophy in North America, too, is that teams should have more or less the same amount of penalties after the game is over. And I don't understand why that should be, because if one team is playing really dirty, they should have a lot more penalties than the other team. But that has not been the tradition in North America, because every coach was, oh, come on, they're crying after the game. We've got so many more penalties. But they don't realize that. They didn't realize that they were playing a lot dirtier.
Yeah, there seems to be a thought that, you know, there's makeup calls and there's, again, like, it's got to be fair, so both coaches don't, you know, for lack of a better word, bitch at the end of the game. I mean, and it's true. If you are the team that's maybe more dirty or maybe lazier, that you're taking more hooking and penalties of that sort, you know, it should be lopsided. And so, Mando, you had a question to Ulf about
linemen. Ulf, I remember when you and Anders came into the Rangers in 79, 78, 79, there was always a question, well, you know, you'd played with Hull for so long, who would be the guy that would play on your left side there? And I remember, I remember the first year you guys played a lot with Pat Hickey, and the second year, and then Hickey got traded the next year in the Barry Beck deal, so I think you were playing with Steve Vickers a lot. I mean, were there a lot of different interchangeable left wings that played, or how did you guys work together as a unit after you played with Bobby Hull for so long?
Well, it's hard to replace the Bobby Hull, because there's only one guy like him that maybe in the whole NHL history. But we played pretty well with both Hitch and Sarge. But I think maybe the one that I wanted to play all the time with was Ron Gressner. So he was needed on defense. So we really needed him back there on the blue line. But we played a few games with Gresh, and I really like to play with him, because he is that type of a guy that can control the puck, and he wants to keep the puck within the team. So
right, because, you know, I remember Hickey was a guy that was a skater, and Vickers was more of a, you know, he was always in front of the net, you know, like Esposito was. So it was kind of really different styles from what you guys were used to playing with.
Yeah, pretty much. You're right there.
And, you know, again, you know, Ron Gressner, his number should be retired at Madison Square Garden. I think there's no doubt about it. He spent 14 years with the Rangers, something like that.
Yeah, I mean,
could play forward and defenseman.
What's holding them back?
I have no idea. It really doesn't. I have no clue. That number should be retired.
Who makes the decision on what number should be retired?
If I knew anything about what goes on at Madison Square Garden nowadays, you know, forget about it. I would be. Who knows what makes they make any decision over there? Who knows who makes it? I don't know. I think it's a guy. It's like the Wizard of Oz. It's like a guy behind the curtain. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. I don't know. So, you know, that raises a good point about
don't,
you guys
don't
coming over.
Don't get me wrong, because they're always treating us very nicely when they come in via games and everything like that. So, but I was just wondering if they have a committee or if they have some kind of fan group that.
Yeah, I'm not sure who makes that decision, but, you know, Gresh was a kind of a guy that wasn't the fastest skater, but he was so deceptive with his stick handling. I mean, he was a superb stick handler.
Yeah.
And I always thought that combination of you two and him was the best combo. But like you said, he was needed on defense and what have you. So You know, so it's some highlights from your Ranger career, obviously going to the Cup. You know, a lot of people don't remember in Game 2 of that series, Rangers win Game 1, okay?
Yep.
Everybody's excited. Game 2 comes along. Bunny LaRocque is supposed to start in goal for Montreal. He gets hurt in practice and back with Ken Dryden. And then the rest is history. And you guys were up in that second game, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So, I mean,
and I think we were so beaten up after the Islander series because that was a tough one, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Alfie, though, there were always rumors about, you know, after winning game one and that the players would enjoy a little bit too much of the Montreal nightlife. Is that something that that maybe contributed to stuff, or is that just kind of excuses and rumors out there for what happened after that?
I was in bed, so I don't know.
He's sticking to that story. He was in bed. You know what? I know Don Murdoch might have been in bed too, but maybe not alone. Let's put it that way. Speaking of some of the characters, Don Murdoch, I know you was a great character, and Nicky Fatiu. Do you have any fond memories about those guys and maybe some of the pranks and some of the stuff they used to pull on the road?
Well, not really, but they were, like I said earlier, it was a lot of great players and characters on that team. It was unfortunately that we didn't go all the way because we had the horses to do it.
Okay.
That Montreal that we lost to, they weren't a bad team in those days either.
No, you had Keyless. Yeah. I mean, you
that
had
great defense with the points, Savard, and
yeah,
really
strong. I mean, and Ken Dryden, you have the, and JD really kind of carried you in a lot of that playoff. One of my fondest memories of that playoff series is the semifinals, game 5. Not the game you guys won, but the game you got that won it was the game 5 on the island. Was that game 5, Mando?
Where yeah, that was Hedberg, 5. Yeah,
where Anders scores. Oh, my God. It may be the top 5 Ranger moments, in my opinion, because you're in the island. It's a hostile environment. It isn't like it is now, because back then the Islanders were battling kind of a curse that they couldn't win in the playoffs, which they later totally got rid of when they won 4 straight Stanley Cup. But they were kind of viewed as a team that couldn't win the big game. And here the Islanders think that they Bobby Nystrom had scored that overtime goal at the Garden, and they thought that they had a good chance to beat the Rangers. And Nystrom scores, I think, to make it 3-3, and they think now they have the Rangers. This is game 5. He scores. They think they have the Rangers dead to rights because the Rangers, you know, and Anders scores with about 4 minutes left in that game, and I still get chills about that game when I watch it or I think about it. It's just a fantastic game. Do you remember? Ron Gresha still hates the Islanders to this day. I mean, was it that much? I know you can respect a team, but you still have kind of like a passion when you talk about that series.
Yeah, I think in those days. It changed a lot, though, but in my career, I only played for 4 teams, really. Nynäshamn, that I grew up, AIK, Winnipeg, and the Rangers. And to me, the crest on the chest is more important than the name on the back. So every decision you make gotta be good for the team, then it will be good for me in the long run. And today, it seems that a lot of players, they don't really care what crest they have in front of them. And I think that's the problem with the draft system, because you're forced to go to a team instead of you are sort of recruited because they really want you. Then you don't leave after 10 years. because you really, you feel strongly about the city, the team, and the fans and everything. But it's no loyalty today from the player and from the owner either. The fans that are loyal.
Right. That is very well spoken and very well said. I mean, it's almost like, you know, with the way free agency is now, you kind of wanted, back then there was kind of a feeling of a brotherhood. You know, that you're brothers in arms, you're fighting for that shield, it's the way soccer is, you know, football, whatever you want to call it is, and, you know, you're playing for that, the pride of the team and the locale, the club, where it's located, and that's missing. That's true, Elf. That's a good point.
Elf, I wanted to ask you about kind of a legendary guy that you may have played with, you may have not have, but Lars-Erik Søberg. He was he went on to become a scout. If I remember correctly, he was a great defenseman. And the Rangers' first real super scout, I think, overseas, he was responsible for bringing in a lot of the European talent. Did you get a chance to play with him, and what did you think of his career?
Yeah, I played with him on two world championships, 73 and 74. And then he went with Anderson Meat to Winnipeg. So we played 4 years together there. He was one of the best defensemen that ever played the game. So
if you had to rate, give me a top five defensemen you ever played against. I'll put you on the spot here.
Well, I probably have to say Gusev and Vasiliev on the Russian team, and maybe Savard. I don't know. It's hard. I never really got to play against Bobby Orr so much.
Right.
At his time.
What about a fellow countryman like Boris Salmi?
I don't think he's up there.
Really?
But
wow.
But Montreal, I don't know, Lapointe maybe, or Fetisov in the Russian national team was pretty good too.
I mean, they played a great team defense. Serge Savard, I mean,
one
of the best all-time defensemen. Are there any guys, this is one question I like to ask, are there any guys, if you don't want to answer, you don't have to, but are there guys that you saw that had a whole lot of talent but didn't have the mental fortitude, you know, the mental aspect of the game? Were there guys that you ran across in your travels as a player?
Oh, you mean that I? Well, there were
like
a
players
lot of
that you played with. Were there players that, like, say they had a great skill level? Theo Fleury says it best. He says they had all the tools but no toolbox, which means they didn't have it up here. Did you run across a lot of guys like that?
Definitely. But it's kind of hard just to pick out players like that. But because people, when they ask me, what are you good at? Well, I can't really skate. I can't shoot. But I'm a pretty good passer. So.
I'm pretty good.
But I was one of the guys that hated to lose most of my teams that I played on, I think. And I hated to lose scrimmage in practice, too.
Well, that's the story with a lot of great players. They take the practice serious, everything serious. And I think, and I have said this many times on this show, that I, as a Ranger fan, the fans hate to lose, right? We hate to lose. I think it's the players' responsibility to hate to lose even more than we do. I just see a lack of pride, and this goes back to, you know, the whole crest issue, you know, we were talking about, and playing for the uniform. That when you, who wants to lose a game? I mean, really, I mean, it should, you should feel sick after losing a game, especially to a team that you know you're better than, that you have better players. And I mean, don't you think that's missing in today's hockey? I mean, I think you do. I mean, we've
You can focus on, because I believe you should, you can never, when you're out on the ice, really think about the result of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So you just have to make a picture for yourself before the game, how nice it's going to be after the game when you won the game. Because the result is something that has happened and that's going to happen. And if you start thinking, well, we can't lose this, we can't lose this, we can't lose this, you're not focusing on the things that you have to do to win the game.
Right.
You get what I'm trying to say? Because a lot of times, 5 minutes left of the game, the Rangers are leading by one goal. All the fans are sitting in the stands now and say, oh, look at the clock. It goes so slowly. And the other team sitting on the bench, Jesus Christ, the clock is going so quickly.
Right.
And let's just focus on the result. We want to win the game, or afraid to lose the game, instead of just everybody like just sitting back and really enjoying and seeing the great place and everything like that. But that sort of is sort of the fans, that's where they can come in and say, well, if you have a goalie that hasn't played well or something like that, you get nervous about what he's going to do with the puck when they come up and everything like that. And the whole building and the whole band feels that. And then it's kind of hard for that player to play well.
Right. I guess, you know, like you said, visualize yourself celebrating after you've won rather than what's going on at the time. And you know, again, when you're nervous and all this anxiety, you're not going to play well. Just play in the moment. I think that's what you're saying. And when
take,
I met you,
take one face off at the time.
And I also wanted to – you talked about something that when I met you, and I didn't forget it. It was about the way to approach coaching, the difference between coaching through fear and intimidation and coaching as a teacher, or more of a I guess just more of a compassionate teacher. Can you tell us what your views are on that?
Well, I think that's the difference between – most North American coaches and most European coaches. I think in the old days, particularly, it was really motivation by fear. If you don't do what I'm saying and you're not successful, you're not going to be here. And that's the way you motivated the players. But I don't think you can motivate players that way anymore. So you got to really help them develop their skills and really make them sort of take out 100% in every situation. And that I think is the secret of the successful coaches nowadays. And make players feel good about themselves, make them see that they can be successful. And that's not about fear. It's about making them see positive pictures and see themselves as winners. And
yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think the Rangers are kind of going through that right now. They have kind of a, you know, a dictator coach. Now, he came in.
And I think Lombardi was one of those kind of coaches that really taught players how to win. And Wooden at UCLA was another one. It was not about intimidation. Wooden was teaching the players how to put on their socks.
Now, I want to talk to you. There's another question coming in. Somebody wants to know, well, playing for Fred Shearer versus Herb Brooks, what were the differences?
I didn't play that much under Herb Brooks because I was hurt so much. But I was up in Lake Placid and saw the Miracle on Ice when they beat the Russians. And Herbie was really a believer of taking the best from the European game and take the best from the North American game. So he was really a student of the game, a little younger than Freddie too. So Freddie was more from the old school. But he had an interesting thing that he told me, Freddie. He said, I will never play you after Phil Esposito, because Phil had a tendency to take a lot of ice time, and he didn't want me to lose ice time. So he always played me before Phil. And that's kind of, that's a sort of, I think, a coach that is really thinking a little bit more than just about, like, intimidation or something like that. He's
right.
He was really right. And he communicated a lot by just tapping you on the shoulder and things like that.
And you said that he always put you and Anders out there on the first line,
maybe not necessarily on the first, but when you can't put Phil on the third line or fourth line, so usually
right.
then we maybe were starting the game or something like that, so Phil came after us. And we tried to have a high tempo all the time in our shift, so I never really took, so Phil, I think, was pretty happy because I usually changed first.
Okay. Yeah, I know that Phil, later in the career especially, he'd like to come to the bench on a shift. He used to take those long shifts, I remember. I'll say I've seen it. Here's another question. These questions, this is from one of our people. Yankee captain wants to know, how close were you originally going to sign with Buffalo? I think we talked about that. So we'll go ahead. He's got some bizarre questions.
Considered, because the Winnipeg team was so interested all along, and I was so excited to have the opportunity to play with Bobby Hull.
Okay, this next question is also, he wants you to describe the brawl in the WHA when Bobby Hull's toupee was ripped off. Do you remember that?
Well, we had brawls almost every game. So it was really a really sad situation most of the times, really, because we had to bring in some really tough guys to just calm down some of the teams. We had a Kim Claxton that was one of the toughest players that I ever played with.
Yep. Nick Fatiu says he is the toughest fighter ever that he ever fought. He gets asked a lot of the Ranger meetings that Kim Claxton was the toughest guy he ever fought. Yeah, and it's funny because the WHA was kind of a tale of two cities, if you will. You had the Winnipeg Jets, who were high-flying and a skilled team, a superstar. But then you had teams like the Bulls and the Stingers, who were just basically out there to fight and cause problems, because that was the only way they thought wrongly that they could get people in the building. Unfortunately, all the good that came through from the WHA, there was also a lot of bad. But the good survived, and the bad's is gone.
I have a lot of great memories playing against the Hulls. Mark and Marty and Gary. They were amazing, too. They were amazing experience.
Who was Winnipeg's main rival in the WHA?
Probably the teams with Hulls. The Houston Aeros, the New England Whalers.
All right. And then now here's one other question. They're coming in, Nelp. They love you. This one, I don't know. Somebody said, they say here you got banned from the 74 World Championships for failing a drug test, but it was only cold medicine. Is that true?
Cough medicine, yeah. It's true. The first game we played was against Poland. And I scored the last goal on a penalty shot. So we beat Poland 4-1. And I was picked to give a urine sample after the game together with another teammate of mine. So we went in there, and he was just a little bit before me. He couldn't pee. So I filled my bottle, and I said, should I fill yours too? Because I didn't have a pee. But we had probably half the team had a cold, so the team doctor gave us a cough medicine that contained ephedrine.
All right. A stimulant,
and,
right?
Yeah, it was just a sort of weird situation because the Swedish team doctor felt really, really bad. But I was banned, and so I couldn't play the rest of the tournament, and we lost the game 5-0. But in those days, the Russians never got undressed to their underwear. They always had the hockey pants, and they had a clean sample of urine in their hockey pants.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. They always said that. And what was their reason for not taking off their clothes?
Because they could hide the urine sample.
So you feel, I guess, you know, the Russians were probably doing steroids and performance enhancement, you know, in all of sports. Let's face it. I mean, it's why they dominated a lot of the Olympic games.
They had different vitamins than we had.
Yeah. That's true. Well, Alf, I got to tell you, we've talked for over an hour here today, and it's been great. And just a bit of news that's just come in NHL-wise, Yaroslav Halak of the Montreal Canadiens rights have been traded to the St. Louis Blues.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently that's – so Halak of the Canadiens, his rights have been traded. Apparently this is something that's not confirmed, but he's going to the St. Louis Blues, so I guess they decided Carey Price is going to be their man for the duration. So that's a little bit surprising. So what did you think about the NHL playoffs off this year? Did you watch a lot?
I didn't watch a lot, but it was exciting to see Chicago win it. And it's also kind of interesting to see that Philadelphia Flyers were so close to losing to the Rangers and not ending up in the playoffs, and they end up in the final.
Yeah, that was very ironic that the Rangers lose in a shootout, and the team that they lose to and don't make the playoffs by 1 point goes to the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah.
So the trade, it's a confirmed trade that Halak has been traded. He played so great in the playoffs. I want to ask you now, when you came into New York, you were part of a radio contingent, right? You were like, tell us the fans out there what that was all about, that radio contest you were involved with, and what you thought about the game, although the Rangers did lose that game, as I remember. They got shut out, I think. Tell us about your experience and what that was all about.
Well, I don't remember. Tell me more.
Well, I think you had a... some radio contest, right? Well, I met you in New York. You were part of a radio contest where the people got
Well, it's the radio in Sweden that they started with their two hosts for this radio station, one guy and a really good-looking girl. And she started by having this girl plane down to Mallorca, Spain.
Mm-hmm.
So these boyfriends or husbands could nominate their girlfriends or wives to go on this plane. And they selected 80 or 100 people. So they started doing that for the guys too. So the first trip was to go to Barcelona and watch a soccer game, and the second trip was to go to New York and watch the Rangers and Detroit. So they asked me if I wanted to come along. and my wife wanted to get rid of me, so it was really a
they
nice
all
trip.
Want to get rid of me. Hey, you know, you've been married a long time, haven't you?
Yeah. Yeah. But I have my kids. I have all my three kids in New York. My youngest guy. Pardon me?
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah. My youngest son, Daniel, he was born in New York in 79. He has a restaurant called Dava up in Hudson, New York, on Warren Street.
Okay.
Yeah. So he became a father on my 60th birthday.
Oh, congratulations. Ranger fans.
May 11th. May 11th.
May 11th. Wow. And now your other two children, are they in Sweden or are they in the States?
Anna is in Jersey City, and Michael is in Norwalk, Connecticut.
Wow.
Michael and Anne were born in Winnipeg, so they're Canadian, but they have Swedish passports as well.
Wow, that's fascinating. So mom and dad decided to go back to Sweden, and the kids stood in the States.
Yeah.
I like
that. But their mother lives in New York, too.
Ah, okay. Now, I wanted to...
I've been married for 11 years, though.
Okay, so this is your second wife. Okay, now I'm over
it.
Now, I wanted to say, now, you went to the game with these people, to the Ranger game. Now, what were your opinions on the game? You had some great Swedish players, Henrik Lundqvist, Zetterberg, Holmstrom. I mean, what was your opinion of the game, even though the Rangers didn't play very well?
It wasn't a good game overall, but people in Sweden, I think, were a little disappointed. They thought it would be a little higher quality. But sometimes you get that during the season, though, that they don't give 100% every night. But I don't understand that philosophy, but sometimes that happens. But because you might not be successful all the time, but you can give 100% all the time. That's my philosophy, I think.
Well, Alfie, on that note, I think that's just a great quote, and I thank you so much for joining us today and spending some time with us. I have to say it's been an honor for me to talk to you and talk about your career, and you're a great person. I've met Ulf in person. He talked about hockey, and I remember him telling me a play that him and Ron Greshner set up, and he goes, I bet you Ron Greshner remembers that play we set up in front of the net and said play. He's just a wonderful guy, and just totally – it's been a pleasure talking to you, Ulf. It really has.
Thank you very much.
And the fans, Mandar, do you have any questions left for the great Ulf Nielsen?
No, I just wanted to say, Ulf, you know, somebody who remembers watching you play, and it was just a joy and a pleasure, and as part of some really, you know, fun Ranger teams to watch, and I just want to say, you know, from the people that used to watch, we always thought that you gave everything you had, and we were just, it was an honor just to watch you in a Ranger uniform.
Thank you very much.
Elf, you take care of yourself, and we'll be chatting, we'll be talking, and maybe we'll do this again.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, take care, Elf.
Bye-bye. Have a good summer.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
There you go. Ulf Nielsen joining us on the show. And Ulfie, he's definitely a more candid and more outspoken than he was early on in his Ranger career. He was kind of a soft-spoken guy, but he's throwing the expletives around and everything, man. It's unbelievable.
The Russian thing was the best.
Yeah.
People always expected it, you know.
Are you in the bathroom? What are you doing over there?
No, I'm in my office. I'm sorry.
Oh, you're nothing. I don't know. So I heard echoes. So now let's talk about this trade. Now we're getting right from a bullet from my Valentine is reporting via TSN Bob McKenzie tweet that Lars Eller and Ian Schultz have been traded for Yaroslav Halak. This is big news. I just think this is kind of I don't know. This is very I don't know. It's kind of an impetuous kind of a thing. Couldn't they have held out? I mean, what are you getting?
Seriously,
Fuck,
I mean,
hell.
You don't think that that Philly would have given them some sort of a good package for him, or you know, any other team that would be looking for a goalie like that? Gainey surprising again.
Well, now Gainey's fine.
Right,
not
Gainey. Right.
Running the show over there. Whoever's running the show again, Gauthier. It's funny because these buffoons in Montreal, the offseason is where they make all the mistakes. I mean, last year we got rid of Scotty Gomez in that ridiculous contract. Although Gomez, he had a pretty good year with the Canadiens, but not for that money. Sorry, kids. But how about the Rangers? We couldn't have given up Lazella and Sergeant Schultz to get a good backup just in case. Because, guys, you know, everybody poo-poos this, you know, getting another good goaltender. God forbid. And we heard it, you know, he came out with it 2 years ago. I mean, at the end of this year, that he had a sore knee. What happens if that knee is not good for next year? You really want to see Alex Auld between the pipes for 60, 70 games? Yeah, there's no problem with having two quality goaltenders. Not that I think the Rangers had any position of strength to deal anybody. Lars Eller apparently is their number two prospect. So you're telling me Bobby Sanguinetti couldn't have went that way? I don't know. But, hey, maybe we could have given Ryan McDonough back. But, you know, listen, you know, I think the Rangers are going to basically stay out of all trades. That's my prediction. Hopefully they don't really go crazy in the UFA market. So that's just a very surprising trade, I think, just at this, the timing of it. Why not wait till you have, you know, why don't you wait? Say, you know what, you want Leno? You had a great playoff. We got some young guys here, and the Flyers would have. I think the Flyers, after losing in the Cup, would have definitely got them better than that.
Oh, without a doubt. And they have good young talent there, too.
Yeah, so I don't know.
Yeah, that's
so we are.
And doesn't St. Louis have that young stud goalie, the guy that was Rookie of the Year like 2 years ago, too, right? What's his name? Oh,
is Nathan
Smith? Was it Smith?
Mike Smith? No, he's not. Don't they have me? I don't know. But, the Flyers, or a lot of teams need a goaltender. I know Halak has not proven, over the long run, but he was great in net. They won with him in net, which is a kind of a key thing. I mean, although in the regular season, a lot of people say that Price and the Canadiens just didn't play well in front of Price, and Price did fade a little bit. But that does speak well of a goaltender when your team plays in front of you very well. I wish the Rangers would learn that.
Well, you know, too, can you imagine the intense pressure now in Montreal on Price if he didn't have enough already? Now he's got this pressure. Now there's no like incumbent unless Montreal is planning on doing something else. That guy, talk about the Montreal press and all the Canadian press that are going to be just all over him, night in and night out, because he looks like right now he's the guy for, you know, 60, 70 games at this point.
Yeah, I mean that place is So I guess apparently they didn't want any kind of discussion. You know, Montreal was not going to settle with two goalies. That's not how they work. That's not the way they've ever worked. They've got to have that one guy that they all worship and is the face of the franchise and the whole thing. So I don't know. It remains to see. But JD gets Yaroslav Halak. So. It's interesting. Now, we're going to talk about the Rangers now. Let's get back to business. Let's get back to beeswax. Let's talk about our New York Rangers. Jay the Dead is posing the question, are the Rangers going to get Kovalchuk? I don't think so. I don't really want him. I think money situation is a big part of it. Plus, let's just stop with the artificial sweeteners. I said it last night, and I know it's typical to say build from within, but listen, haven't we had enough of this? I mean, how many years are we going to be banging our head against the wall doing the same things? And it might not work, but let's just try it, huh? Let's give it a little bit of a, let's wing it for a while with the young kids. I know it's never been tried, but what the hell? Do we have anything to lose except more boring games? And I'm going a little mini rant here, basically, because this is something. I had this argument with Kotze. Everybody said, the Rangers missed it by 1 point. First of all, the Eastern Conference sucked. The Eastern Conference was terrible, as far as I'm concerned. Second of all, how many boring Ranger games were there last year? I mean, there must have been 50. I mean, they play the most unexciting hockey I can remember. I mean, I used to think Rennie was the cause of this. No, they're just boring. They are a boring team. They don't score. It's almost like I'd rather see them lose 5-4 than watch Lundqvist have to stand on his head while nobody can score. And I thought it typified, I said on last night's show, the only guy who scored in that Flyers goal in that Flyers game at the end of the season was Jody Shelley. The best line down the stretch was Jody Shelley, Prust, and Anisimov. I mean, again, Gavrik's an exciting player, no doubt. Delzato's coming up there. If he ever can learn a defensive zone, he's going to be great. But why not bring these young guys in? And I guess maybe that's the case. Bring a Kovalchuk in. He's going to be exciting, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, it just – a lot of people are not re-upping their season tickets. I can tell you that much. I got a feeling that the people – it's boring. I hate to say it, but, you know, now with the hockey package, you get to watch some other games. You watch a game out west. It's a total different thing, right? I mean, am I off the mark? Tell me if I'm off the mark, and if you do, I'll still disagree with you.
No, you're not off the mark in the sense that they just don't. I mean, there's always going to be a difference in style between East and West Coast. You know, the West Coast always tends to be a lot more wide-open game than the East Coast, which is more, you know, north-south and east-west. But still, it's not. They don't have any creative players, and that's the problem with the Rangers. They don't have anybody who's creative with the puck. You know, when we talk about the Rennie years, we talked about boring hockey because the Rangers were very good defensively, weren't letting in any goals. But you still had players. Nylander was a fun player to watch. Jágr was still, you know, a productive player. But I also, I just believe that they don't have any other than Delzato, there's no creativity coming from the back line either. So you're not getting that one quarterback coming up the ice on a consistent basis. It was unfair to expect Delzato to keep that up in this rookie year that way, you know, getting, you know, his feet wet. And once they learned his stretch pass, you know, they were able to defend it, so he's going to have to make some adjustments. But there wasn't any creativity. Didn't see that. That's why it's kind of interesting. I've seen, you know, some reports about the Rangers interested in certain centers in the offseason. A guy like Tim Connolly, you know, and everybody's like, well, you know, he's not a number one center, you know, what kind of guy is he? Well, he's a creative guy. He reminds me a lot of an Adam Oates type. Guys that can dish the puck off, have some creativity with the puck. You know, it's not always the same thing, you know, on the power play where you pass it around the perimeter, you know, 20 times before, you know, Roosevelt can't keep it in the zone. So hopefully, you know, we're looking at some creative plays. It looks like, you know, the Stepans, the Wericks, the young guys coming up have it now. They have that excitement. They have that creativity. But it's all going to be, you know, what happens when they get up here? How is Tortorella going to use them? How, you know, do we have the leadership right now that can go ahead and get these guys, you know, to keep that enthusiasm and you know, keep that jump up for the whole schedule. And that's such a big unknown right now.
Yeah. You're right, because I think, you know, but then again, you know, Tim Connelly is not a sexy name for New York people. They're not talking about guys like this. But these are, these are key guys that you need to have on a team. I think one of the Rangers' biggest downfalls is not having a center iceman that can create something from his own blue line and over the red line. They haven't had that in a long time since Nylander's departure, and they really depend a lot on that first pass from the defenseman. And after a while, it becomes very predictable. And what they need is a center iceman. And again, you know, I don't know how they can obtain somebody like that, because they really have to get people on the cheap. I mean, you know, everybody loves Erik Christensen. I think Erik Christensen, for what he was paid, did an okay job. I think he can improve. He's got some potential. He's got some scoring touch, which they desperately need
he's more of a complementary piece to a good team than the foundation
right.
of a good team.
Right. See, I think a lot of Ranger fans set the bar way too low. A lot of these players, like somebody said, you know, somebody made this comparison about the Rangers giving up, what was it, third pick to get Brian Boyle in this year's
mm-hmm.
draft. I'm like, well, Brian Boyle played pretty good. He was a good penalty killer, a good fourth line guy. He was a good fourth line and penalty killer on the Rangers. You know what I'm saying? You know, you put him on Detroit, is he even playing? You put him on Chicago, is he playing? Is he cracking the lineup? You put him on Pittsburgh, is he cracking the lineup? You know, you put him on Washington. I know it's a little unfair because, you know, listen, the guy is playing his heart out, you know, but the Ranger fan has to set down the bar's got to be higher for these guys. We cannot accept, I mean, we don't accept it, but mediocrity. Again, like you said, Erik Christensen's a good role player on a very good team. But because of the cap restraints, which is just such a big factor with this team, they can't really go out and get these guys for $3 million, you know, because they're locked up with paying Patrick Rismiller still and all this other nonsense. And they got the Aaron Voros is on the team. I mean, does Aaron Voros really need to be on an NHL team? I mean, come on.
Yeah, but he makes Gabrick laugh.
And he's Avery's drinking buddy.
So there you go. There's his role. That's what he gets on there. Do they have, though, within to build that team? I guess that's what we want to know. You know, Grachev seemed to be the guy that we were all, this time last year, we were all, like, salivating over Grachev. You know, what will he do? And I think he had a disappointing year, you know, in Hartford. But I don't know. I think maybe just the experience was fun. I think this guy's got to be a mainstay in the lineup. This guy is he's big. He's got a touch. And maybe, you know, for whatever reason, he didn't have the coming out year in Hartford everybody expected. Okay, you sent them down there. He spent the entire year there. Now let's see what he's got. You know, we build up these guys for a year, and then if within – you know, the first season they haven't done anything, then they're labeled a bust, or, you know, we overrated them or something. I want to see Grachev up. I want to see Stepan really get a shot. I want them to sign McDonough and see what he's got. You know, it was surprising last year seeing, you know, both Delzato and Gilroy make it out of camp, I got to admit. But then what did our fearless leader do? He carried six defensemen, you know, 70 games through the year before finding, you know, Erickson out there to you know, push somebody for a spot, or until he used, certain players as whipping boys. So I'm still confused about the leadership on this team. I'm not convinced of it.
Yeah. Well, I think the problem with Grachev, and we have a phone call on the line, so let's go to area code 623313. You're on the air with Eddie and Mando. I almost said Jim and Eddie. Hello.
Well, now I'm on the air with Jim and Eddie and Mandar.
It's Jim.
How are you doing, Jim?
Jim.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
Oh, it's going pretty good. I hope you didn't. I just checked the switchboard. I hope you aren't on hold too long.
No, 2 minutes. I got to hear about the first 10 minutes of Wolfie. I listened from my desk, and then I heard about another 15 minutes while I was in the car on my way to my meeting. Sounded really good. He was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think he was a lot more. We always said it, but he was a lot more personable, a lot more free flowing. I mean, he was dropping the S bomb and telling us about how the Russians were hiding their urine samples. They refused to drop their hockey pants, which I thought was pretty funny.
Now, I wasn't sure if I heard him right. Did he say? Well, I heard when you asked him about the Sassoon commercials. Did he say my ass was too big?
Yeah.
That's what I thought he said. That's funny.
That's so funny. Yeah, that was. Yeah, Alfie was great.
He had a lot more sense of humor about those Sassoon commercials than Dave Maloney did when we asked him about it. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah, Dave Maloney. Yeah. We should have been concentrating on hockey, not doing that. I don't have fond memories of that. What a buzzkill he is.
Nice. And I just want to let you know I got a very nice email from Michael McKinley's publisher who set up the interview for last night. And he'd already heard from Michael, and Michael told him what a great time he had on our show, passed along his contact information, and said he can't wait to come back on and talk to us again.
Oh, wow. So good. We're big with the book people. Maybe we can work a book deal out after this is all over.
We're very literary on this show.
Oh, yes. I didn't even read that. You did. But, I mean, I skimmed over it. And I started reading it today. Okay, I guess. So I'm glad. And where are you now? Are you en route to somewhere? This meeting or something?
Heading back to the office.
Well, I'm glad that you're here. Hell to you.
Have you ever seen that movie, My Fellow Americans? It's with Jack Lemmon and James Garner. They both play presidents in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Funny movie, but my favorite part is when they both talk about playing that, when they hear that song, how they made up their own words to the song. And that's what I think of. That's what I think of every time I hear Hail to the Chief. I think of that movie.
Well, I've got some news for you, one bit of news hockey-related, and one bit of news show-related.
Okay.
Let's get down to it. Let's get down to business. First of all, Yaroslav Halak of the Montreal Canadiens has been traded to the St. Louis,
right?
Yep, for Lars Eller and Sergeant Schultz. From Hogan's Heroes.
See nothing.
Hogan. Oh, that's clink.
Hogan.
Anyway, so that's the NHL news. And Jay of the Dead.
Was hired as,
Jay of the Dead. Let's remind everybody else. Just give me a couple seconds. Let's remind some of you people what happened, what you people had to suffer through last night. The 12-inch. The intro couldn't be any longer.
The morning I stared out the window and I struggled for something to say. You left in the rain without closing the door. I didn't stand in your way.
Well, get away from me!
66 WNBC.
Well, I wanted to say, Jim, we will not be able to play that song anymore because Jay of the Dead has developed the Get Ron Greshner on Blue Shirt Banner Radio group. So Jay of the Dead, who couldn't stand any more of Randy Van Warmer, the late, great Randy Van Warmer, who was who went to Terminal Dreamland in 2004, where he now can sing that song in heaven. But so apparently...
So now we know how to get what we want out of these people.
Right. So Jay the Dead is saying that the people were in the hall in his apartment complex, and they heard the song, and he's like, he was so embarrassed that he made a page. That's what we got to do. We got to embarrass you guys.
Wait until next week. Wait until next week. We'll break out Jefferson Starship. We built this city to get Espo on the show.
Wasn't that voted the worst song, worst video at least? On
I think it was voted worst song on some radio show.
Yeah. Almost as bad as Don Johnson's song. What was that, Heat Wave?
Heartbreak. I mentioned that one last night. Eddie and I were talking before the show, talking about bad songs, and that was one of the ones I mentioned.
Yeah.
Don Johnson. But so we got those bit of news, and I don't know. I mean, what do you think about this Halak deal? I mean, didn't they, you know, it's been discussed in the chat room and in here. I mean, don't you think the Flyers would have given them a lot more to get a goaltender than Lars Eller and Sergeant Schultz?
I'm wondering if the Canadian didn't give up the wrong goaltender.
Yeah, that's the question.
And also, I don't know if you saw the Devils hired John McClain as head coach today.
Yeah.
Former Ranger, John McClain.
Yeah.
John Muckler favorite, John McClain.
There was some buffoon that said on the HF boards, I can't believe the Devils steal another Ranger great. I'm like, like 13 years with the Devils, you moron? 11 years with the Devils? He was like a Devils first high, you know, big draft pick.
What did he play? One season with the Rangers before Muckler buried him in Hartford? Was it one season?
Two, maybe.
Two?
Yeah. Two, yeah.
Another Ranger great. Yeah.
Surprise season in the book. Elfie, I didn't bring that up, the fact that me and Elfie leafed through that page and pages of Ranger greats looking for him and he wasn't there. I didn't want to rehash that with Elf. But, So I just had not realized how prolific Ulf's, and when you listen back to it, how his history in world tournaments, especially playing the Russians in there, I mean, you're talking about the Iron Curtain days of hockey where playing against some of the greatest players in the world when it was a whole big mystery and this dark mystique about the commie Rushkies. And he even admitted that when he came to the Rangers, he was pretty much beat up. I mean,
I was just going to say, I heard that in the car. I heard him say that, I think he said something to the effect of, by the time I got to New York, my body was pretty shot. Not often you hear an athlete say that.
I mean, 9 knee operations. He's had his hip replaced. How long did he say, Mandar? He has had that new hip for like 11 years or something.
Yeah, right.
1994, he said.
Right, and 3 pieces of his vertebrae, top 3 pieces crushed. This is before even, we're talking 1972. This has already happened. And it's unbelievable. And I wonder why some players are just unlucky like that. So we were talking. I don't know if you heard the discussion about the Rangers and whether this Kovalchuk thing is feasible or do we want it? Do we not? Some Ranger fans want it, and I can't.
I can't blame the Ranger fan going for the shiny new toy, but again, when are we going to learn? I know he's a good player, but will he be a good player in a Ranger uniform? That's the question. So what do you, Jim, what's your take on this at this moment?
Well,
we get the late arrival as Frosty has now joined us.
He's probably just getting home from work. I said this before the trade deadline, and I still stand by it. They should avoid Kovalchuk like the plague. He would be a bad fit under the current regime. I just think, and he's going to take up way too much salary. It would just be, no, they got to stay. We got to learn our lesson at some point as Ranger fans and as hockey fans, for God's sakes, you know? I mean, God, how many big contracts do we have to give out before we say enough? It's a bad idea. It's a bad idea.
And me and Mando were talking, and this is my new summation of the Ranger season. Everybody is trying to make it look – Ranger fans are trying – they're in some kind of dysfunctional la-la land that they think that the Rangers just missed the playoffs by 1 point, and the Flyers, they may be just as good as the Flyers because the Flyers went all the way to the Stanley Cup, and it took a shootout to eliminate the Rangers from the playoffs from the said Flyers. But, you know – people don't realize how bad – people forget the previous 79 games of that – 81 games of that season. They stunk. They were boring. They sleptwalked in more games than I can remember. So, I mean, we got to set the bar higher. And I don't think bringing in a Kovalchuk is going to change the direction of this team – is going to make them any better. What's going to happen is, guys, I hate to say it, but we're going to have to suffer, and we have to. We have to. I implore the hockey god. I summon the hockey god from Mount Olympus. Wade Redden must be buried in the minors, and I mean a sealed sarcophagus where he cannot escape. He must be sealed. I don't care if we got to get a priest in there to make sure he doesn't emerge, but he has to be buried with that ridiculous salary in Hartford or Rochester or Bensonhurst, wherever they're going to bring him, because they've got to clear that salary, and they've got to clear the absolute defensive, I don't know if the word flaccidness is a word, but that flaccid defenseman has to get, his flaccid play must be eradicated. Wouldn't you agree? And if you disagree, you're on crack.
You remember the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark when they seal up the ark in the crate and wheel it, you know, and that's what they should do with Wade Redden. you can get, for the money they pay him, you know, the ridiculous amount of money they pay him, you can get two or three Dan Girardis. I mean, that's not to say Dan Girardi is anything great, but hell, would you rather have two or three Dan Girardis or one Wade Redden? You know what I mean? You get three serviceable defensemen for one bum, you'll take it.
Mario M. said, let's use Wade to plug the BP pipe.
That wouldn't work. Look how leaky his defense is. How would he plug the leak, the oil?
He is sludge, though. he's as slow as sludge. Oh, yeah, you're right. He is a little bit leaky, though. Jim's thinking. I'm a reactionary. I left. I thought it was funny.
Oh, it's funny.
But Mario Morgado. I think I pronounced that right. But, yeah, I think we were talking about Grachev with as far as Mando goes, and you've had people talk about it, is that he may have just turned pro too quick. He was all set to become a pro. His agent pushed him there. But, you know, Leslie Treff, we had on, she saw him. She feels that he's not NHL ready. I'm going to have to disagree with her. I think he's the kind of guy that he needs to be playing and developing with high-level players, not stuck down there in Hartford with Mitch Beck and that cast of injured characters they had down there all year. For all what the big guys, you know, he's 20 years old, whatever he is. Let's see what he can do. He looked good in preseason, I can tell you that much.
So, anyway. So,
that is a scoop with that. And I don't know. We got 10 minutes, 12 minutes, 10 minutes left in the program. So, Jim, how was your day at work?
Well, it's just a laugh a minute. And I imagine,
hold on a second. There's a news flash coming in. Mexico just scored. They're up 1-0 over France in the World Cup.
Oh, wow. Wow. Final score, 2-1. The final score is always 2-1.
Sorry, Jim. I didn't want to step on you there. Go ahead. I felt that was breaking news.
Well, it's soccer. It's important.
But really,
we can't diminish the importance of soccer.
Wow. Come on. I think soccer has more scoring than Ranger games. And let's face it. I mean, I'm telling you, people forget. And I'm here to remind you. Our team is bad. Our team stinks. Stop. Give me a break.
Hey, Kool-Aid.
Kool-Aid's over. Now I'm going to have a fallout shelter clip. Everybody get in, because it's a disaster area.
You know what's the other thing? We're Ranger fans that all jumped on the Hawks bandwagon. That's all well and good. I was rooting for the Hawks, too. But you know what? It's over. Time to get back off. I'm sick of hearing go Hawks out. Get off the wagon. Let's get back to business here.
Yeah, I think I know who you're talking about, too. There's certain people out there that are frequently. What do you keep talking about the Hawks for? The season is over. It's Rangers season again.
Right.
It was Rangers season the whole time. They were a sidebar to me. I'm rooting for players on that team. Oh, I love this guy. I hate everybody on every other team. I love my bums.
Exactly.
Wow.
All right, fellas. I gotta get back to work.
How dare you? Okay.
I'll talk to you guys later.
All right. Take care, my friend.
Bye.
I mean, seriously. Everybody with this Hawks mania. They won. It's over. Who cares? It's not the Rangers. I don't give a shit. Since the Rangers hoisted that cup, I don't care. I go, oh, Kaner. Who gives a shit? That guy's a punk. I got news for you. I don't like that guy. He's got an ego. Is that the guy?
What's that?
Kaner for him, I don't like. Who's the one he asked?
Was he the guy that did the thing in with that cab driver and stiffed him or something like that? Or
he's the one who assaulted the cab driver up there in Buffalo.
Yeah.
He rubs me the wrong way. He's a super talent, but he seems like a real immature prick in interviews. I don't know why. I just get that vibe. But he's a hell of a hockey player. And
hey, look, it all came together for them this year. I mean, they faced the Flyers in the finals. They didn't face the Penguins or the Capitals. All right, they did what they had to do. They beat it, San Jose.
Yeah.
Give them credit. But now that's it. I mean, they're going to lose about four or five good, solid guys because their cap situation is ridiculous, and you move on now. They're not going to be there's no way in hell they're going to be back again in the finals next year. And not with what they have to lose.
Now, this just in, and this is kind of unbelievable here. McKenzie just tweeted Carey Price has been traded to Phoenix for Shane Doan.
Get out of here, really?
No, I'm only kidding. Shane Doan.
Jim just swallowed his gum somewhere.
Jay, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Kane is a super athlete, but he's a douche. And Rangers fans got to stop with this Chicago. stuff. I mean, that's nonsense. Oh, Dustin Bufflin, I wish we had him. Well, we don't. We don't even have a guy as good as Dustin Bufflin's brother, probably. We might, but he's probably in the minors, and a guy named Dale Weiss. Well, we're going to have on this program soon. Next Tuesday, Chris Knuckle Nyland on this show. I better see a lot better turnout than today. Well, today's an afternoon show, so I can't get on everybody. I appreciate everybody's here. I'm going to do a special roll call because there are some special people in here.
It won't take you that long.
Hey, listen. I appreciate everybody. And now that we can go back to the roll call because we finally have a page. You know? And it was developed by Jay of the Dead. Now, what's your deal on Facebook? You got hacked into your account? What is going on with you?
Yeah, I got hacked, and so I've decided to end my relationship with Facebook.
Well, parting is sweet sorrow. So you can't
it is. You know, there was life before it, and there'll be life after it.
All right, let's get to the roll call.
Mr. Mouth.
It's Mr. Mouth, the new game from Tomy that can't keep his big mouth shut.
Mr. Mouth.
Try to flip your chips into his mouth before he closes it.
Mr. Mouth.
First one out of chips is the winner.
Mr. Mouth.
I'll just give him my hippo hurricane collar.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Blue Shirt Banner Radio Ranger. Oh, I'm your old daddy. And now let's talk about the people that are in this glorious chat room in this afternoon of love and trip and travel to Sweden, June 17, 2010.
It's an afternoon delight.
What?
It's an afternoon delight.
There's skyrockets in flight. It's an afternoon delight. As Bullet for My Valentine, 01 is here. B4MV. A couple months ago, we found out what that meant. Bullet for My Valentine, a heavy metal band. And I think Bullet was talking about a mosh pit in one of his Facebook things. And I haven't been in a mosh pit in quite a long time. Last time I got trapped under one, and I think I almost had a panic attack. You know, I do have panic attacks. You know when? When there's no ice cream in the refrigerator and when I can't find a remote. All right, now, Frosty99, Anthony, Tony, whatever you want to call them, Tony, Maroney, Macaroni, Frosty, we love you. You are a diehard. I hope everything went well at work. And we just love what you do and what you give back to the community as a male prostitute. So I got to say, Frosty giving his wares. Maybe he was out for a little siesta with one Jackie Lamba. Who knows? A little afternoon delight. We'll bring it right back to Mandar, what he said. Jay of the Dead, the man, the creator of the greatest Facebook group on earth. Get Ron Greshner on Blue Shirt Banner Radio. Was so sick of hearing Randy Van Warmer that he actually made that page. Jay, we appreciate it. Sorry we had to get hostile with the tactics, but we love you, and thank you for doing that. And the great 90 seconds left in this broadcast. Holy manolis, cannolis, strombolis, quick tempolis, free holies. Can't think of any more holies. But anyway... The great man. Thank you for joining me and helping me out with Elfie. Mando, always a pleasure. One of the most informed, most insightful Ranger fans you're ever going to come across. Mario M. Marianne Morgado. I think Morgado. I don't want to say your whole name, but Mario M. Certainly a lot better than Mario Lemieux, who, although Mario Lemieux was a great player, not one of my favorites, but did come out one of the best lines ever. About the league, the NHL was a garage league, which I always refer to when they make some stupid, ridiculous
rule change. Frosty is saying Jim out and Mandar in. So guys, I will, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for joining us. Ulf Nielsen was terrific. We'll be back next Tuesday, I think. No, we're doing a next Tuesday. Next Tuesday we'll be back with Chris Nylon, and then on Saturday we're doing a draft show. You know me with dates, so don't write that. So good night, everybody, and have a good day. We're gone. Mandar, thank you so much.
Michael, thank you.
Anytime.
So everything going down, everything good? Everything kosher where you are?
Everything's kosher. We get 90-something degrees every day now. It's just broiling out here.
It refuses to, the sun refuses to shine for any extended amount of time here. It was like overcast. It's kind of like last summer here, which was not really summer. It was kind of cold. All the sun worshippers are flipping out.
Oh yeah, we've had 8 straight days of 90 degrees, and they're saying that it doesn't really look like it's slowing down. But it's we get some nasty thunderstorms. I don't even know if you guys could hear it because my phone line was open, but we were starting to get some thunder now too. So it was pretty fun. Pretty fun.
Yeah.
I was up last.
Sorry. What happened? I'm sorry. I clicked the button. Go ahead.
You know, I was up last week. I came in one day to do a training class for work, and I was over at Pat's on, I want to say it was Wednesday night. Yeah, Wednesday night. And then, you know, Appa stuff. And then after that, I was thinking about going over to your house, but I was like, it was like 10 o'clock, and I didn't want to come over that late. So, but I had a sweet Pat. Yeah, I had a sweet Pat in the app World Series, so.
Ah, they didn't make any mention of that, conveniently.
Oh, you didn't?
No, I didn't hear anything about that. And next time you're up, there's this cool barbecue place in Patchogue we got to take you to.
Yeah, really? Good?
Yeah, it's pretty good. Portions are big, too.
My favorite. Doesn't matter how it tastes as long as there's a lot of it.
All right, Michael.
All right, take care. Give my best to your lovely wife as well.
The same goes for you, baby.
All right, buddy. Take care. All right, bye.